We're here on the K&M Podcast. Ken Brown from WGR Radio. Mike O'Hara, DetroitLions.com, talking Lions football. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Ken Brown. Aren't you glad the bye is over?
Yes. I was looking at the paper this morning. Imagine that, looking at an actual paper. But is the asterisk by the Lions' name yet? Are they officially eliminated from playoff competition?
It's heading in that direction. It's trending that way. Trending.
Yes, we call this Reaction Monday for those who are listening to this on Monday. And
Overreaction Monday or underreaction?
Just reaction period. You know, I wake up in the morning and yelling and screaming. I went to bed last night yelling and screaming. It is what it is. The Lions lost a game yesterday that I thought they were competitive in. I thought, forget about the final score. It was a one-score game to me, and I just thought the Lions did not make plays when it was time to make plays. And Dallas got a couple of favorable calls, which I don't go by referee calls, but they did get a couple of favorable calls in the game. And the Lions come up on the short end. Two games now, no touchdowns after the league-leading offense, Mike.
You know, Kenny, I just looked something up before here. It wasn't because it was going to be on this podcast, but just, you know, I like to look at statistics and all that. And as you recall, they were number one in the league after four games, averaging 35 points a game. They are now ninth at 23.3, I think it is. 12 games, that's two touchdowns less per game they're averaging now than they were just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you don't score.
And you played a real good defensive team yesterday, which was, I think, number two in the league. And the Patriots have a real good defensive team. I don't know what their number is, but you play 2 weeks of good defense, and you don't have all your weapons out there. Yesterday, after St. Brown went out, I was just looking over the lineup, and it was really not much to talk about. But that doesn't excuse Jared Goff, and I'm going to get on him
in
a minute.
Not for his performance, but I'll just do one thing. And I don't disagree or agree about about the injuries. Look, you play with what you've got. I think the play caller did a nice job of switching things up there. The way they used the tight ends, I think they got nine catches out of T.J. Hockenson and Bright Dwight, whichever it is. So I thought that was a good adjustment. But some other stuff, just kind of wondered. They look a little bit, you know, they looked under equipped offensively for the game, and I think that's proven in the fact that they couldn't get in the end zone again.
Well, we'll get to Goff in a minute because I got a theory on Goff. Then we'll get to Campbell. But I want to talk about the major play in the game, the big play in the game. It was really two. The first one was the interception out of halftime to me, which I thought was a second and two. If you're going to throw a pass, it's either got to be to your guy or nobody. And I just thought Goff just threw that up there. And he threw it inside where the safety and the corner were there. If he throws to the outside and it's bad, underthrown or bad pass, then it's okay. It's just a missed pass. But I just thought he was just reaching at that point. It was just not a good pass.
You talking about the pass for Josh Reynolds?
Yeah, the pass for Josh Reynolds.
That was the third play of the third quarter. That wasn't the second quarter. That was the third play of the third quarter.
No, I didn't say second quarter. I said it was second down and two.
I'm sorry. Okay, I misunderstood.
Yeah, it was second down and two when they threw the pass.
I'm not you making this much sense and being this calm.
It was second down and two. Well, like I told you, I told the people that listen to these podcasts, I know what they are this year, and I know what I want them to be, and I know where I want them to go. And nothing has changed from the beginning of the season to now. Like I said, I thought they could win eight games if everything went right. Everything has not gone right. Man, they still could win eight games. They could win seven games, but they could lose seven games. So I'm just taking it week by week. But there are some disturbing trends that I'm not liking. And one of them is from that quarterback, Jared Goff. And he's reverting back to the reason why another team gave up two first rounds plus him plus a third round pick to get rid of him.
Yeah, that was, by the way, I think you were way off on your pick of eight wins. Way off.
We'll see.
Well, mine was nine. I thought you'd fight on that. So I agree with you with Jared Goff. Look, he looked really, really good. And I said then, if he keeps playing that way, the Lions have got their quarterback of the present and the future, and they don't have to waste any assets. Well, I shouldn't say waste. Use any assets on another quarterback. They can use it to build the defense. Now, from what I've seen the last 2 weeks, and look, what you've seen lately is always the greatest influence on you. And that's exactly the case with me. I'm not so sure. If I had to make a call right now, I'd say that quarterback job is up for grabs. Now, one of the guys who's grabbing for it is Jared Goff, but boy, he doesn't have much of a grip on it, I'll tell you that.
Well, even if he plays well the rest of the year, you decide you're going to go with him next year. By this point, you got to realize you got to bring a young guy in that you eventually want to groom to be a starter, at the least, next year. That's at the least. Because it's just not – it's just what – he is what he is now, Mike. He's 7 years in the league. He is what he is. And, you know, it's just – he's not mobile. Just face the fact, the physical attributes, he's not mobile, doesn't have the greatest of arms, and he – when he starts to get hit, he just doesn't. He runs. He floats a lot. This is the way he has always played. That's what he is. Now,
you know,
is it the best quarterback we've had since Stafford? Probably still the second best quarterback between Landry and Stafford. You know, Landry and now.
Third best.
Who you got in the third?
I take Landry ahead of him.
That's what I said. Landry, Stafford, and him. Some between the two time periods, though, he's the best, second best quarterback or third best. But it's just that he's just not a guy that can put a team on his back and win a game. And if you don't have that as a quarterback, then you're looking for that guy.
No, I don't disagree with that. Like I said, he could look. It would take a heck of a turnaround from what we've seen the last 2 weeks to convince anybody, myself included, that this is the quarterback of the future. But you can't just take a quarterback. You can't just draft a quarterback because you need a quarterback. I mean, look at this. Look at this year's crap of quarterbacks, Kenny. Nothing great about it. Would you draft? Say the Lions get one of the top two or three picks. Would you take one of the guys and one of the quarterbacks in this year's class?
Yeah.
Just to have a quarterback?
I would take Bryce Young. I think Bryce Young's going to be a real good quarterback. The only thing about him is size, and I think the way you can't touch quarterbacks these days, that makes up for it. So, yes, I would take Bryce. I think Bryce Young is the shining light of these quarterbacks coming out. And then, like I said, they haven't even got to – I don't even want to get into that right now, but they haven't even got the evaluation time. There's always a guy that comes out of nowhere, like Josh Allen, these guys years ago. There'll be guys they'll be talking about when draft time comes or in the pre-draft stage comes. So let's not even talk about that now. Just know what you have on your team and then work around it. Because it could be a veteran you could be bringing in. It could be a – you know, like I said, Lamar Jackson's going to be available possibly.
Yeah.
It's guys you can go out and get. But – let's get back to the game for a second, because there was some points of the game, and this is where Dan Campbell comes in. And last year they were 0-6 at this time. Now they're 1-5. Are they really any better, Mike, in 1 year?
Are they any better? Yeah, I don't think they're getting. I don't think they're outside of the. Yes, I do. Outside of the Patriots game, they're not getting blown out like they were. There are no 44-6 games like they were last year at this time. So yeah, I think they are better. I think they've got better players than they had. I think they're better suited, you know, going forward than they were a year ago. I think they're starting to, you know, shape the roster with what I think, you know, some pretty good young players and doing some pretty good young things. So yeah, I think they're better. Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Now, are they good enough? No. But you're asking me if are they better? Yeah,
right.
They're better.
Well, we knew going in that any chance they had for those 9 or 8 wins we were talking about is they had to be semi-healthy. I mean, the key players were going to have to play the whole year. And up to this point, that's just not happened. And like I said, they're not deep enough to overcome like a Walker injury, a St. Brown injury, a Chalk injury. I mean, you can get by a game like the Seattle game maybe with missing those guys, but you can't sustain it for long because you just don't have enough talent yet.
I think they can sustain more on offense than they can on defense, but I think they've gone past the breaking point on offense. Now, look, are we ever going to see DJ Chark again in a unit playing? I don't know. I mean, I think he's probably been the most disappointing acquisition.
Especially after training camp, where he was really – he was good in training camp.
He looked good in all this, but what did he produce? Not really, not much. And now that he's out, he's missed, what, 3 games, 4 games, and he's on injured reserve, which means 3 more. You know,
yeah.
Had some sort of surgical procedure. I think it's –
he got his screws taken out, I heard.
Right, yeah. he no longer has a screw loose.
Right.
Well,
you know, but yeah, but, yeah. That's so that sometimes you know you just you don't get what you paid for, and I think that's the case with Chark. And I, you know what? He's probably just as disappointed as anybody else because he was on a 1-year prove it contract at a pretty high rate to prove it. But and this doesn't help him either.
No. But at least it was a 1-year deal. And like I said, Brad Holmes' track record now taking free agent wide receivers is not good. Last year with Perriman, this year with Perriman and the other guy whose name escapes me, the one from Oakland that they cut, the one that got the concussion early in the year, the 6'4", I forgot his name, McLemore, whatever his name was. Him, Chalk, and now he's not having a good string with that. You know, he's drafted pretty well with St. Brown. But that string's got to stop. You know, you got if you're going to go get these wide receivers, they got to at least play for you. So we'll let that go. I want to get back to the game for a second. A lot of people crying today. A lot of people. Mention a name. Starts with S. Before the halftime.
Who's that?
I'm not saying. Before the halftime.
Tell me and a couple other people here now.
Well, like I said, you can make a guess who it is. I only listen to radio in the morning before I come in to do these things. So, anyway, before the half, they sat on the ball with the last minute and a half going. Did you have a problem with that going in the locker room with a lead, or did you want them to try to get points?
No, absolutely not. And I agree with what I heard T.J. Lang say about it. What expectation did you have that Lions are going to go from the 3-yard line, 60 yards, and do anything except turn the ball over? And give it to the Cowboys and let them extend their lead. And I agree with them.
Or tie the game or go ahead. You're going in the lead halftime with the lead, and you can assure that. Why not do it? You're getting the ball when you come out.
You've got the ball. Yeah, exactly.
It's just idiotic for somebody to think that. And plus, that was right after the turnover. The first run was 13 yards. I think it was from the 4, so you're at the 17 to 20. You weren't like you were at the 45 or the 50. You're at the 30 with a minute and a half left, and if you start throwing the ball around and get dropped passes, they'll get the ball back with a minute left.
Yeah.
It's just idiotic. I know you're upset, but use some damn common sense. You're going with the lead. You get the ball coming out of the half. Case closed.
Yeah, I got it. Just look, and people hear things and they watch TV and all. And that's great. It really is. It's sometimes it gets a little aggravating, but I talked to somebody when I got home last night. What not you or somebody else? And said, boy, a lot of people are saying they should have challenged what? The
Brock Wright spot.
Brock Wright.
I was going to go to get to that next, but yeah. You can't challenge
short of the goal line.
But you couldn't challenge it either. You couldn't challenge.
I mean, come on.
You could only challenge if you scored or not, and he didn't score, so you're going to lose the timeout. And you need those timeouts in the game. If you would have blew a timeout and you only had 2 left and it was a close game at the end, people would be crying about that. He didn't get in. Instead of – this is what burns me up about this fan base too. Instead of putting the blame where it lies on the next play – they worried about that play with Dan Campbell not challenging him or doing what he can do. The guy didn't get in. Nobody told you to fumble the next play. You know, if the next play is a touchdown, nobody cares. It should have been.
Right, you've got 4 shots at it from the 1-yard line.
And I was a Dan Skipper. You know, I was saying move him to the right side. Oh. Yeah. Now I see why not. Man, if you saw that play, Dan Skipper got blew up, and that was what caused the fumble. Because they put Dan Skipper on the right side, the other side of Sewell. And if you look at Sewell, Sewell's like sealed his end, but Skipper's there, and they just went right over the top of Skipper, blew him up.
Kenny, in Skipper's defense, he's 6'9", almost 6'10", playing guard. And being able to get leverage at that size. And he and other players here have talked openly about that, about what he's overcome just to get on the field at that size. So I cut him some slack. Just because he's built in a way that is not conducive to getting low and driving people off the line.
I understand, but geez, can you have a standstill for a second? Sewell's 6'4".
Call a different play.
I know, but
Sewell's not 6'8" or 6'9".
I know. I was just saying he was standing next to Sewell.
Body type.
He was on the outside of Sewell, so at least you can
inside of Sewell.
No, he was outside of Sewell. They had him. They had Sewell at the tackle. And they put. They put Skipper on his outside, and that's where it got blew up. It was just a crazy play. That's another thing too. I don't understand is why they don't just run a regular offense from there. Because it seems like when you bunch in, You're bringing them. I'm just saying, I think they should do that more. Like, put the receivers out, do a regular play from, like, the goal line. Why do you have to bunch inside like that? Run a regular play so they don't know if you're going to pass or run. And then if you're running, at least, you don't have everybody stacked in that middle. I just don't understand why they knew. I'm sure it's probably a reason, but I'm saying I don't understand.
Of course there's a reason.
What's the reason?
Everybody does that. Because that's your best chance to score if you got four shots at it.
No, I'm not talking about shots. I'm saying when I say regular offense, I mean put the receivers out wide, you know,
I know
five
what you're saying, yeah.
Why is that not better than bunching everybody inside
because,
with no receivers and then the defense bunches all their guys in the middle?
Because when it's goal to go at the 1 or 2 yard line, you're so bunched up there with the end zone, you really can't run people off. They're just going to knock the heck out of you if you do that.
I don't know. It seems to me that if you got receivers out wide, that takes a defensive player out wide on each side. So
that takes a blocker out wide, too.
That's true. And then it's just one-on-one. And whatever. Okay, whatever. I'm sure they've got a reason for it.
Kenny, let's pass on this one, okay? Let's argue this out on someone else's
side. Just think if you're not a good bunch form team, and I don't think the Lions are. I think they're average at that right now, especially with Big V being out. See if you had your whole offensive line there. But
you hated on him all last year.
Well, he's better than anything you got. But like I said, I got him on my list to look out for, too, because he's got a $9 million hit for next year, which we'll talk about in a little while. So he's on my watch list. He's on the KB watch list.
Oh, we're going to start talking about next year. Let's talk about it way more time. Okay?
Well, there's a lot of things happening, but basically everything we're doing now is about next year, Mike. Now.
Well, let's – no, it's not.
Dan Campbell. Record is equal to like Marty Morningwig's and Jim Schwartz's record after I saw it today. It's like 419 at this point.
Marty Morningwig won 5 games. This is only 4. Don't cheat.
No, I said at this perfect time after like 23 games, their records are similar. Each of them had 4 wins at that time.
You know what? I say so what, even though I looked that up last night.
So, is it fair to start asking questions about Dan Campbell?
If you want to, yeah, go ahead. It's not unfair. Look, these guys are subject to scrutiny. It's the way it is. Yeah, go ahead.
Do you think that if things don't improve, he doesn't win games, that it's a question mark if he should be under the microscope at the end of the year?
He's already under the microscope.
Well, he's under the microscope with the fans. I haven't heard ownership say he's under the microscope. I'm saying, is it a legitimate ask if you don't see wins by the end of the year that it's a possibility that he might not be the guy?
I do not think he'd be fired at the end of this season, but I think it would be a legitimate question to ask Sheila Hamp. If she's available for a public interview, a media interview, to ask her about the status of her her head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the Detroit Lions doing what they did 3 years ago, was it, where they fired both the general manager and the head coach at the same time. Then you're really starting over. You really are starting everything over again.
Well, I think Brad Holmes should be able to get his own hire. I don't think the two are together in this one. Because, like I said, he didn't hire Campbell, and
he signed off on it, and he accepted.
Well, he signed off on it, but you want the job. Of course, you're gonna sign off on it. So I'm just saying, every GM should be able to get at least one hire.
If he signed off on it and wanted the job, okay, then you did.
All right. Now, a lot of
and listen, that's not an anti-Holmes comment I'm making. I'm just saying, if that was part of the deal, okay, it's part of the deal. You accepted it.
All right. But like I said, we'll talk about that later. I don't want to get into that right now this early
well,
in the season.
Did.
I just only brought it up because I was just saying that the two
shouldn't
be tied together. One is about putting the team together, and the other one's about coaching it. And I think the problems with this team right now, besides the health of this team, are in the coaching part. Because you only could do so much with the cap space you were allowing, whatever, to bring in new talent. There was a couple of miscues. But I think right now, players are the reason. Some of the players are the reasons why they're 1-5.
I think the biggest problem on this team is the same thing they had last year. They inherited a roster that was absolutely shot.
That's what I said.
Okay, we're still.
That's what I said. I said.
Well,
and,
they,
But some of your veteran players are the ones making the biggest mistakes in these games.
And you know what? And slowly but surely, those veterans are being phased out.
Well, I want to see
yesterday. Pay attention. They started four rookie draft picks yesterday. Four on defense.
I understand.
That's not half, but it's close to half. Right. And what at every level.
And we'll talk about those in a minute.
Two linemen, a linebacker, and a safety.
I agree.
Right up the middle to the power train of that defense.
I agree. Now, former players on Twitter have weighed in on this, and this is an interesting thing. I usually don't put stuff in like this, but since I know this guy, I used to cover him, and I know him. You covered him too. I just want to put this out here. This is a tweet from Terrell Crosby. And I know Crosby probably has a beef with the Lions right now because of what happened with him and his back surgery and how he felt the team treat him. But he puts this tweet out yesterday. You mean to tell me a coach whose entire personality is letting you know how much caffeine intake and using a million words to say nothing coherent, ain't it? Especially when you're one of the best offensive lines at your disposal. Interesting.
And interest me a bit.
Interesting. And Terrell Crosby, no matter what you say about him, whatever, he's a good dude. He always was. So,
whoever say anything bad about him?
I'm just saying. People talk about
him.
Well, I saw people after they responded to him about him being bitter or whatever. And he might have some bitterness to him, but he's also a good dude. And there's some truth into that statement. There's some truth into that statement. A lot of personality. Not a lot of coaching right now, Mike.
Well, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Like I said, you got time.
We'll make sure we call Terrell Crosby. Then.
We got time.
When we form our opinions and our views.
Oh, did we hit a little close to the nerve here, Mr. Mike?
Not to me, you didn't.
All right.
No.
Nah. Well, he didn't mention Mike O'Hare. He has another tweet about the Riders. Mike O'Hare. No, he didn't say anything.
No, of course not.
Why
would he?
But, Mike, you know, Mike O'Hare used to cover me. No, he didn't write that. All right. Some PFF grades came out. Interesting grades. You know who the second best safety is according to PFF? Rookies.
Second
these are rookies.
Where?
Rookies in the league this year.
Go ahead, tell me.
Our guy.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, I was
our guy Joseph. Our guy Kirby Joseph.
Kirby Joseph of Illinois. He was a very active player at Illinois. He had six interceptions his last year there. And he's starting to show something now. Look, he had a couple of shots and a couple of picks and wasn't quite able to deliver it. But you look at his across the board, what he did yesterday. He had a sack. I'm sorry, he had a quarterback hit, he had a tackle for loss, a couple of other things.
Caused a fumble.
Forced fumble. He was around the ball. If he wasn't around the ball, he went out and found it, got there.
Right. I guess secondly, fifth best edge is Agent Hutchinson. I guess the Agent Hutchinson bus talk can stop now. He's got five sacks in six games.
Oh, no, it hasn't.
He's got five sacks in six games, okay? Khalil Mack had four his whole rookie year.
Hold it. Who cares about Khalil Mack?
I'm just putting it out there when people want to put a person as a bust after five games.
Kenny, would it be possible for you to live in at least the 20th century, let alone the 21st century?
My only point was at least give a guy a chance. They were ready to send this guy home after four games. Yes, they were.
Kenny, how are they? Hold on a second. Be realistic. How are they going to send him home?
I'm talking about the fans. Well, this is what we're talking about here. This is what we do, this thing. This is who we're talking to right now. These are the people that are listening to us.
Kenny, you're trying to arrange the 2023 draft right now. You're doing the same thing the fans do.
No, I'm not saying that.
Yes, you are.
I'm not saying that. I was saying this. I'm letting the young players play. I don't judge rookies until that 1 year in.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have this conversation taped.
You know, but I'm just saying, the Bacali guy bust out the four games, and he had three sacks, and they still call him a bust. Now he's got five in six games. So just let it play. Let the guy play. And he looked much better moving him around, the other side, you know, standing up sometime. He just looked like a more at ease player.
Listen, I do a Tuesday column. Tuesday column called What We Learned, and that's part of what I'm writing about. Look, he's on pace right now to have double-digit sacks, which is very, very difficult. Doesn't happen a lot for rookie defensive linemen. It's just the way it is. And we talked about this last week, and I think the week before when I talked to the defensive line coach here, Todd Walsh. So when those guys come out from college and they probably were playing against a guy, a sophomore or even maybe a freshman, or at the most a junior in their last year in college. And all of a sudden they're lined up head-to-head against a guy who's 28, 29, 30 years old, has been in the league for 7 years. You're not going to win those matchups just coming out of the gate like that.
No.
It's the way it is,
no.
And he's learning it too.
And I said at the beginning of the year, if he got over 8 sacks, it'd be a good year. I didn't know he'd do it in 3 games if he does it, but I'm just saying, I said 8 sacks would be a good year. So if he gets over that, to me, he's had a productive year, and he'll get better and better. And and with the return of Josh Pascal, who you can see immediately can
yeah, he
play.
Really, you know,
he can play.
You look at his stats line, and it's just 2 tackles.
Right.
There's 2 things about him. Number one, he played 56 of the 63 snaps. First game out.
Right.
Hutchinson, I'm sorry, I was going to say Hawkinson, I got confused here. He and Hutchinson played the most snaps of any of the defensive linemen, and they're rookies.
Right, exactly.
It's all the more impressive because Pascal was his first game. And he, you know what? He was ready to go.
Exactly.
He was ready to play.
And in reference to that, Kaminsky only played 10 snaps coming back. So, you know, and he was there all exhibition season and played, you know, the first couple of games.
Hurt.
I'm just saying.
He's been hurt. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just saying, though. So they really put a load on Pascal for this game, and he responded.
Yeah.
And he responded.
Yes, he did.
And
yes.
As long as he stays healthy with that sports hernia, I think he'll just get better and better. But you can see the attributes why at draft night they were so excited he was still there. He is exactly what that team needed on the other side.
Yeah, and I really thought, just looking at it, I looked at some, did a little bit of research on that, you know, post-draft research, and I thought, I'm not sure about Kirby Joseph, that, you know, if they might have overpaid him or overdrafted him, whatever. Not at all. Guys, he's the real thing there. Now we'll see what happens. You know, got, you know, coming down in his career. But you know, 6 games he's played all 6 games. And he started 3 of them, and he looks like the real thing.
Yeah. Now we'll talk about it later on. But is he a good match with Walker when Walker comes back, or they play the same position and he'll be like the backup? I don't know. How do they just play 2 safeties side to side? How does that work?
Well, yeah, they play one would play strong and one would play the free safety.
And he's more of a free than a strong.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm just wondering when Walker comes back next year, because I think he's a good safety, and I think he only needed a partner.
Can we get to next Sunday's game?
Well, no, but it's important because, like I said, you want to put him at the position.
It's not important.
Yes, it is, and let me tell you why. You want to put him at the position that he's going to play from now on. When Walker comes back, Walker's getting his spot back unless he totally loses it from the Achilles. So I want them two to match up together. So play him at the spot that is not Walker's spot when he comes back. That's all I'm saying. You know, you're looking beyond this year. That's all my only point.
I'm taking a deep breath here.
All right, well, let's give us something we both can agree on then.
Okay,
Jeff Okuda probably played his best game yesterday.
You know, those 15 tackles he had, it's hard to find, accurate research on that. But according to what the Detroit Lions have at their disposal, 15 sacks are the most by a Detroit Lions cornerback. Most tackles, I'm sorry, whatever I said. But 15 tackles are the most by a Detroit Lions cornerback since 1994. The first year they started keeping that particular statistic. So that's a lot of guys who have come and gone since 1994. What he did was remarkable. It really was.
Well, it also transitions for him, too, that, you know, eventually you can put him in as a safety. You can put him in as a corner. You can move him around. He's multi-talented. I mean, he can tackle. That's how Charles Woodson was. I'm not saying he's Charles Woodson, but, you know, that's how Charles Woodson was. And Charles Woodson played a lot at the end of his career as safety. So I'm just saying, when a guy can tackle and play like that, he can do a lot of things for you. He can do a lot. You can put more corners on the field and put him in a semi-safety position. You can put him one-on-one with the guy because he can cover. He's just a real good player, and it's good to see him healthy and getting better, even though I still would have took the quarterback. But I must admit, he's better. He's getting better and better.
Well, that's nice of you. I appreciate that.
I know.
Because I've been a Okuda guy since they drafted him.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, so good for him. Now, the Lions play 2 good defensive teams. Like I said, the next couple of games are home games. This is how I will know if the Lions are getting better. they haven't won it on the road in Campbell's tenure as coaching, so that's another thing. But you got to protect home base. I don't care if the team is better than you at home or not. Yeah. I got to see you start winning these home games. You got two home games coming up. I want to see them win both of them. No excuses. I don't care what else is going on in the world. You got two home games in a row. This is when you win home. Get your home record right. Like I said, you got nine home games. Try to win six of them.
They got nine. They don't have nine left.
No, they have nine total, and they played two already. Or three already.
Three.
They played three.
They're one and two.
So they got six left. Try to win six. So you got five out of the next. Try to only lose one more home game the rest of the year.
Why lose one more?
I said,
win them all.
They're not going to win them all, but you can try to win them all. But I'm saying acceptable to me is get five out of the six. If you start winning at home, then the rest of that stuff comes second nature. And that's when you start to know if they've turned the corner. You're winning at home. You're home. You're hard to beat at home. Now you go on the road and split. Then that's when you get the good records.
Well, I agree with you on the home thing. I've been harping about that and the division record. It's been very, very weak. You know, that atmosphere at Ford Field on Sunday is electric, and they have not paid back those loyal fans what they have coming. They really haven't. And the same thing playing in the NFC North. You know, piddling around, winning one or two games a year, going 1-5 or 2-4 or 0-6, have done that.
Yeah.
The last few years
have been bad at home. And I used to ask Patricia about that, and he gave me some mumble-jumbled answer about it. But I was just saying, if you look, it's a reason you guys are not winning at home. But, like, right, with Patricia, they weren't winning at all. But it's still, you should be winning home games.
I could not agree more.
All right. Next week is the trade deadline. Do you think they should be acquirers, or should they look to move a couple of people if the prices are right?
Well, if they've got a demoted veteran who you can get maybe a sixth round draft pick or something like that, a low round draft pick, yeah. But now if you've got just because they're veterans doesn't mean they're at the end of the line either, and you want to have as many good players out there on the field as you can. So I think it's one of those things that just depends.
Yeah, it depends on what you can get. But there is a couple of players, I'm not going to mention their name, that I think I would see what their value is out there. And a contending team would love to have them. And I think they're extra pieces for you right now.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, I think you can do that.
We'll see.
I think you can do that. Another thing, too, I wonder why the league doesn't have a retroactive IR. And I was thinking the DJ Talk thing you were talking about. He was put on IR last week, left to miss four games. He missed the two before.
You mean like baseball?
Yeah, like baseball. You retroactive to the last time you played. You know, the NFL doesn't do that. When you go on, and it's four games from that point.
Right.
Yeah. I think they should do that because, like I said, They tried Chalk to hold him out first to see if, he'd come back. So two games go by. Then this is the third game. So if you'd have retroactive, he'd only have to miss one more. Now he's got to miss three more.
Well, they could have taken him out the week before the bye week, and that would have only missed one game in 2 weeks.
Right.
They should have thought of that.
Right. So, that's right. You get an extra week for that too. Right, exactly. So
they should have thought of that.
Yeah. All right, Mike, so this week we got the Miami Dolphins coming in. Tua's coming in. They won 16-10 yesterday. I watched the game. I wasn't impressed. It's a beatable team to me, especially for them coming on the road.
No, I don't think they're anything special. I don't think they're as good as we thought they were, but I'll tell you what, they got speed at wide receiver.
Yes, they do.
They can hurt you.
Yes, they do.
But I don't. I think it's a winnable game. I wouldn't pick them to win, but I think it's a winnable game.
No, I'm done picking the Lions. That's my last time I'm picking them until they start winning. Sorry. They've fooled me six times. I'm not doing it. So when they start winning, then I'll start picking them. Even though I could have swore they were at least at cover yesterday. They should have covered. The last two giveaways messed that up.
Well, they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't. So,
as Dan Jenkins' character, Stroker Ace, once said, what could have happened did.
All right. Any closing thoughts before we let it go this week, Mike?
No, that's it. Just, look, it's a beautiful day out right now. I'm outside doing this. It's going to be another nice day tomorrow. I tell people, don't focus completely on the disappointment you might have had on Sunday. Enjoy the day.
There you go. All right, that's Michael here at DetroitLions.com, KenBrownWJRRadio.com, Frank Ragnow this afternoon, 5:30 p.m. on WJR. Join us next week as we'll review the Miami game and talk about the Green Bay Packers. See you later, Mike.
All right, Ken.